This is a WSMI podcast from the Tally Broadcasting Station.
And on this Saturday morning, the 30th day of January, Tim Mize, Dave Jenkins.
T-Tote, good morning.
Good morning.
Last Saturday of January.
The last Saturday of January, and that means Litchfield Hillsborough girls play.
Absolutely. The first one was fantastic.
Oh, yeah.
Hillsborough
yeah.
survived, and that's a game. Late, Abby Brockmeyer meant nothing, but she sank a three-quarters court shot at the end of that game. Didn't matter, but it was a heck of a way for it to end.
Yeah.
She's up over 1,500 points for her career now, coming into tonight.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, she got her 1,000th point in the first game of the year, so over a 500-point season for her here in her junior year.
I think she's got six, at least going into, I think it was going into Thursday, she was 16 points away from her highest season total, and she's going to get that, so.
All right.
At some point this year.
Well, that's tonight on the radio.
Yeah.
On Thursday night, of course, on the radio. Ooh, what a game between Southwestern and Hillsborough. Lived up to the billing. State-ranked team. Southwestern was 2. Hillsborough was 5. And TU had the call. I saw it myself. Fantastic. Fantastic high school basketball game.
Those two teams did not surprise anybody. To be honest with you, it was just a matter of, Hillsborough – led most of the way until they turned the ball over 3 times there real quick, and Southwestern kind of grabbed momentum from that point on, and then Southwestern just was Southwestern. You know, they got the lead, they held on to the lead, and Hillsborough built a 10-point lead at the end of the first quarter, had a 10-point lead at the half, but you just knew things were going to tighten up in that second half.
And I think they had up to a 14-point lead at one point in the second quarter. That was really the only thing that surprised
me. They had a 14-point lead with less than a minute to go in the half, and then Southwestern cut it to 10.
And I think then Matty Greeling hit 2 threes right out of halftime. So big swing right there, a 10-point swing in just a matter of about a minute
of game time. Matty Greeling was just
ice water in her veins.
What, she was just unbelievable.
From the free throw line?
She was Matty Greeling.
She was Matty Greeling.
Especially that third quarter, she owned it.
Yes. You're right. She owned it. That second half, she owned it because she had 20 of her 28 points in the second half. So
always talk about big-time players making big-time plays at the biggest part of the game, and boy, did she rise to the occasion on a Thursday night. And, of course, the first game after the county tournament, she eclipsed the 2,000 career point mark Southwestern. Yeah, just sensational.
Yeah.
Actually,
the all-time leading scorer by a wide margin.
Terry and I were talking about that the other day. When was the last 2,000-point scorer in the area? I guess
Matty Greeling. I think it was Monday.
Yeah.
When they played Stomp.
Terrific ball player. Just fun to watch. And now as a senior, so smooth about every aspect of her game, offensively, defensively. You know, it just,
She's one of those players, too. It's hard to believe she's already a senior. Even though she's played all 4 years, a lot of times it seems like kids that start for 4 years seems like they're there forever. It seems like she just came onto the scene last week.
I remember watching her in the eighth grade state tournament game and when Southwestern finished second to team out of Normal, and I thought, holy mackerel, this kid's going to be something else, and she has turned out to be something else.
Well, I remember Steve Woolley saying when she was still in junior high, you wait.
Yeah.
You wait till this Greeling gets to high school. She's the real deal.
Yeah.
Good
call. You can throw her into those great guards that we've had over the years in the area, and Maddie's certainly holds her own.
And maybe, in that matchup on Thursday, it was a great kind of matchup of the senior greatness of Maddie and the freshman potential greatness of Sammy Matush, to where really, in the end, the senior leadership of Maddie, the experiences she's been through the previous 3 years, I think probably helped her a lot in the second half of that ball game.
And one thing for Southwestern, they're healthy this year.
Finally.
And that they're finally healthy. And they've had some terrific teams, but they've had problems with injuries in the past. And
clocks.
You wonder if they're playing with a little bit of a chip on their shoulder just because Hillsborough has been touted so much this season. And Southwestern,
as well,
not that
as well, Hillsborough should be touted because they are a terrific team.
And not that Southwestern's been forgotten, but they've kind of been playing second fiddle for most of the year.
You're right. I think they've got a chip on the shoulder for what you just said, though, T, from the things they've been through with the injuries the last couple years. This, these girls, they're seniors. This is it.
And Tim, you and I have both agreed until somebody rips, the title from Southwestern.
Yes.
Southwestern still has it. They still are the program in the South Central Conference.
The demise of Southwestern has been projected a few times, but it never materializes. And the regionals on their home floor, and they've got a 40-something home game winning streak. The last team to beat them on their home floor was the Gillespie Miners in the regional championship game when the Gray Twins were sophomores.
Wow.
Wow.
That's the last time they lost
there. That's been a while.
Not a while.
Been a while. So, but we're getting into a fun time of year with the girls' postseason about to get underway in a week from Monday on the 8th of February. It seems like it's early this year, but it's not. It's the second week of February, and wow, we'll have, of course, broadcast coverage from various regional sites. So.
And Southwestern and Hillsborough on a potential collision course in the Beardstown sectional, but there is a lot of postseason basketball to get to before that point. As we know, upsets happen all the time.
Sure.
Hillsborough has Auburn, potentially. Yeah. Well, they do have them in their regional, so that's looming there in that title game.
Well, Hillsborough is the number two seed overall in that particular subsectional, and they get the opening round bye, and also in that bracket is Auburn. So Auburn's the overall number three seed.
They've beaten Auburn twice this year.
Mm-hmm.
Tough to beat a team three times. Mm-hmm. Both in tournament play, too.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So, but that's why they play the games.
And that's why Hillsborough plays the types of games that they play throughout the year. So they've now lost, what, maybe three of four, maybe even four of five have the toppers. But you look at who they've lost to, and all of those teams will be playing deep into the postseason.
Well, going into the game Thursday night, of the six losses between the two teams, they were all in tournament play. Mm-hmm. So, you know, quality programs, quality game. And you know, somebody had to win. It was Southwestern that pulled out the victory, but boy, what a great game it was!
What a great
packed
atmosphere.
House!
Oh,
you know,
fantastic!
It was a very tournament type atmosphere. It really was. It was just absolutely terrific. So
there was over 2,000 people there.
There was a lot of warm bodies there. Lots of warm bodies.
That's probably, you know, that JV game. It was a great JV game. They basically played in front of a packed house the whole second half.
They did. And then Don Huddleston was with me. I turned to Hud and I said, Hud, what a great setup for the varsity game here. You know, the JV game ends up being a 2-point game. And what a great setup for the varsity game. So everybody was kind of into it.
That's right. It was a lot of fun on Thursday night. And who knows? Maybe we will get the second installment in a few weeks.
If Hillsborough and Southwestern meet in the postseason, it would have to be in the sectional championship.
Sectional final.
Yeah, which means there's a lot of basketball to be played.
A lot of good teams standing in the way.
A lot of good teams standing in the way, but that's why you play the tournament. So.
That's right. We need to get to a break here on Sports Saturday. We're going to have an interview with Mount Olive head coach Dave Kernich. We'll bring that to you at about 9:30 this morning here on Sports Saturday. When we come back, we're going to dive into our girls' regional matchups. The pairings are out. We will talk about that following these messages on Sports Saturday.
WMSMI Sports Saturday rolls on here on this final Saturday of January 26th. 16. Where did this month go, guys?
Not really sure. By the wayside, we know that.
My gosh. You know, we always talk about the beginning of the basketball season, you know, the benchmarks, you know, Christmas tournament, the mid-season tournaments. How do we get it just goes so fast, and it's the longest season of any sports season. Basketball is.
Doesn't feel it.
But it sure doesn't feel like
it.
I tell you, those two tournaments last a couple weeks ago came by quickly.
Oh, yeah. Good tournaments.
I don't remember them being that soon in January.
Hmm.
It was just a week ago we had our championship Saturday, and that was a fun day of basketball.
Lots of basketball, yeah. And by the way, kudos to our friends at Southwestern High School and Litchfield High School. Terrific hosts, great tournaments, and you had great games all week long.
Yeah, the 98th Macoupa County Tournament wound up being just so competitive. Yeah. Really, girls and boys across the board, just great ball games throughout the weekend. You said it, Southwestern did a fantastic job hosting that tournament.
And Litchfield did a terrific job as well. So
tell you, that Litchfield-Hillsborough game I did, the ninth place game didn't feel like a ninth place
game. No, I did it.
Packed.
The Panther Gym was packed.
It was standing room only. I'm not kidding, because there were people at the doors watching the game.
That's great.
Couldn't get a seat.
Yeah.
It's funny because Lebanon and East Alton Wood River was the game before that.
Were there people tucked in behind the benches as well, Dave, watching?
There might have been, yeah. I just know from the
hanging from the rafters, from the two doors,
they were like filing in. I mean, there were people waiting to get into the stadium while the previous game was going on.
Yeah.
Litchfield-Hillsborough.
They weren't into the Lebanon East Alton Wood River game.
No,
I mean,
no,
that's weird.
Which wasn't much of a game anyway. Lebanon crushed them, but
well,
good game. Congratulations.
With Litchfield-Hillsborough, you know, it's one of those traditional rivals. You pitch the records out because they just don't matter. It just doesn't matter.
Yeah, we've had three games between the two teams, girls and boys, on the radio, and all have been packed.
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. Well, see, when Litchfield and Hillsboro Girls, which they play tonight, we'll have it live at 7:30 here on FM 106. When they played the first time, if you remember, that was also a Saturday.
Mm-hmm.
But just 2 days earlier on that Thursday, Southwestern mopped the floor with Litchfield. And then Litchfield comes in just a couple days later and plays a great game against Hillsboro.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But it's Litchfield-Hillsboro.
Yeah. So, good teams rebound.
It happens.
And they do. They do. Yeah. And, of course, Litchfield, we're going to be talking about postseason matchups here. Litchfield is in Class 3A this year, so we won't be talking about the Litchfield appearance in postseason play until next week.
Yeah.
Because that's when the 3A and 4A girls teams will be seated and the pairings announced.
I haven't looked at Litchfield's schedule, but I assume they're off a week and a half. I was going to say, they probably don't have a game scheduled in that regional week.
They end, I think their last game is against North Mac, who's also a 2A school. It's on a Wednesday, so they'll have a week and a half off going into regionals. Litchfield will.
It's a long time.
So you guys want to get together and play?
Like in
I'm too old.
What, full court? I don't think so.
Play horse.
There we go. That's more my speed. Maybe knockout.
Knockout. Yeah.
The Southwestern girls, they play knockout. Like when they go out and shoot at halftime, they don't just shoot around. They play knockout.
Yeah, knockout's good.
That's a solid game.
Oh, that's great awesome.
They start at the free throw line, and in the second game's a 3-point line.
That's fun. I love playing that game.
Fun game.
You play that, I'll play.
That's right.
Play.
I can handle that.
I can handle like 30 seconds of it, and then I'm dead.
I'll still be winded. I'm out of gas. I'll play.
Hey, let's dive into these postseason matchups here. We're going to start in Class 2A with the regionals that are feeding into that Beardstown sectional. In the North Mac regional, these are games that will be played on Monday, February the 8th, quarterfinal regional. North Mac, the 8 seed, will take on Kincaid South Fork. They are the 9 seed. That'll be a 7 o'clock game on February the 8th. That'll be the only game on Monday night at North Mac. Then on Tuesday night, the 9th of February, at North Mac in the 2A regional, second seed Hillsboro will play at 6 o'clock, and they will get the winner between North Mac and Kincaid. And then the second regional semifinal at North Mac on the 9th of February is third seeded Auburn and sixth seeded Waverly, with the winners of those two semifinals to play on Thursday night for the regional championship.
I think all the regional championships involving our local teams have the regional championship games on Thursday night at 7 o'clock. So. All
which
of them.
Which is good for us.
Which is 1A and 2A both. So, yeah. Makes it easier to remember.
Absolutely.
For people like me.
Which is always a good
thing. Yeah, What time is 7 o'clock.
Southwest.
They're all 7 o'clock, guys.
Always 7
They're
o'clock.
All 7 o'clock.
Which, of course, is different from the regular year when it's 7:30.
Yeah.
The Southwestern Regional, of course, the Piasaw Birds are the top seed in that subsectional. In a quarterfinal game to be played on Monday the 8th at 7 o'clock, it'll be Carlinville, the 7 seed, taking on Staunton, the 10 seed. The winner of that game will then get to play Southwestern on Wednesday the 10th of February. That will be a 6 o'clock game in the regional semifinals, with the second semifinal on the 10th of February at 7:30. 4th-seeded Gillespie against 5th-seeded Greenville. The winners will square off for the Southwestern Regional Championship. Gillespie just beat Greenville, I think, on Thursday night by about 8 points at Greenville. So that'll be a very quality
game. Well, it's a 4-5 matchup.
Absolutely.
You know, 4-5 matchups, I don't care what level you play at, generally are pretty good ball games. So, and this one should be a good ball game as well.
That will qualify.
Yeah.
So those two winners will then feed into the Beardstown sectional. And as we talked about earlier, they will not meet in the sectional semifinals. They will be on opposite sides in the sectional bracket.
The other regionals that feed into Beardstown are the Pittsfield Regional, where Camp Point Central. I knew Camp Point Central was pretty good. I didn't know that they were going to get the number one seed for that particular regional, but they get the opening round bye, and they would draw the winner of the Rushville Industry Beardstown game on Wednesday, I believe. And then Williamsville and Pittsfield will square off in the second game on Wednesday. And then the other regional that feeds into Beardstown is Pleasant Plains. And this is a pretty good regional here.
Yeah.
You've got number 2 Havana with a first-round bye along with Athens. Havana will get the winner of Tri-City Porta. And then Athens will get the winner of Pleasant Plains versus Riverton. So, good regional tournaments feeding into that Beardstown sectional.
We saw Athens last year at the Williamsville sectional. They beat Southwestern and Litchfield to win that sectional, and a lot of that squad is back. And if you follow them at all this year, they have had a lot of really quality wins.
And Athens boys and girls teams pretty darn good this year.
The girls already beat Hillsboro this year in the Williamsville or the Riverton tournament.
Riverton.
Sorry.
Yeah. So, Athens a pretty darn good team.
And, with all the talk of Southwestern, all the talk of Hillsboro, and rightfully so. Athens, I'm sure, is just loving that. They're gonna fly right under the radar.
I don't think you're going to fly under the radar anymore. I think the word's out on Athens.
The word may be out, but yeah. No one's talking about it.
Well,
all the talk, Southwestern,
yeah.
Hillsboro.
Yeah. And they're the top two top-ranked teams in the state.
That's
but
right.
Athens was ranked in the top 10 as far as the AP rankings.
I mean, that's got the potential to be a ridiculous sectional.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, well, but that's what you want.
That's what you want.
That's what you want. You know, they've done the subsectionals because they want to try and get the best four teams in the sectional tournament. IHSA, when they had the neighborhood regionals, like I used to call them, neighborhood regionals, sometimes you would have two or three good teams in a regional, and only one would get to come out of the regional and get into the sectional. And sometimes you'd have blowouts in the sectional tournaments. The IHSA has altered the way they do things because they want good games in the sectionals, figuring it helps out the reputation of the state tournament series.
It's really
it's a pretty good theory.
It is. It's a little bit like the March Madness in the sense everybody loves the upsets on the first day until George Mason's in the Final Four.
Yeah. And then you want the big dogs.
Then you want the big dogs. Yeah, That's exactly right.
Yeah, yeah. By the way, Pena is hosting a sectional this year, and the Pena girls will be playing at Toledo Cumberland. They will have Cumberland in their first round game on Monday, and the top seed in that regional is T-Town, and Vandalia got the number 4 seed, and they both get first round byes, and that's where Pena ends up. So the Panthers would love to have sectional play on their home floor, but they're going to have a tough road.
They will have earned it if they get there.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
That's always a great atmosphere for sectional basketball, too, Pena High School.
Oh, yeah. These bigger gyms, you know, and girls basketball continues to improve as the years go on, and they draw very nice crowds once you get to the sectional level. So
that's right.
Yeah.
Or you might wind up with 2,000 people at a regular season game on a
Thursday. On a Thursday night, yeah. A couple of state-ranked teams. What the heck?
There you go. Well, you know, I'm sure it's not the first time that has happened where we've had two teams in the South Central ranked in the top 5 in state squaring off at that time. It's probably happened before, but it doesn't happen a lot. Does not happen a lot.
Not very often. Not very often.
Like, I think probably back, like, to maybe, like, the Hillsboro Pena games,
Hillsboro
like, with Hope Schulte and Olivia Lett.
Yeah, back in the middle part of the 2000s, early 2000s, yeah. Those two teams are ranked in the state, and, you know, those were always packed houses.
Those were some battles.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Crazy, just crazy games that you can't even hardly believe, so. One game in particular was a comeback win for Hillsboro, and then they win it in overtime. And that's still probably one of the more bizarre games I think I've ever broadcast in my entire life because Hillsboro was way down with just, you know, a handful of seconds to go. Pena clunks a couple of free throws. Hmm. And Hope Schulte hits a three-pointer at the buzzer to send it into overtime. You know, Hillsboro comes down, makes a couple quick baskets, and then Schulte hits one at the buzzer to send it into overtime, and they win it, so.
Good
stuff. Those are great games. Great games. Yeah.
In the 1A regional tournament coming up beginning on the 8th of February at the Neoga Regional, Nokomis is over there. They'll be playing in the second regional quarterfinal on the 8th of February. The 6 o'clock game has Stu Strauss taking on Pawnee. That's a 9-10 matchup at 6 o'clock. Then Nokomis takes on Cowden-Herrick. That's a 7:30 game on February the 8th. Now, the winner of the Nokomis-Cowden-Herrick ball game will take on Neoga at 7:30 in the semifinals on that Tuesday. The winner of the Stu Strauss Pawnee game, well, they get defending champion Central A&M.
Welcome to the
Have
regional.
Have fun with that.
Yeah.
Have you seen some of their scores this year? Oh. They are just crushing people again.
Yeah. They're a juggernaut. Yeah. Yeah.
They were in the state title in the state tournament 2 years ago. Did they get second or third? I can't remember now.
I don't remember.
But then they won it last year beating Calhoun. But I know I saw a score earlier. It wasn't that long ago. They were winning 34-2 after the first quarter.
Pretty good.
That'll work.
They're pretty darn good. And, you know, I don't care who's in that whole sectional complex. Team to beat Central A&M.
Yes.
Yeah, I don't. Yes. It just.
Defense is their
good
game.
Good luck, you know. Maybe you can get them on an off night, but
every other team in the other part of the bracket is just hoping that somebody takes care of the Raiders so they don't have to try.
Please get those people. Please get them.
That's right. Someone.
Figure out a way to beat the Raiders, would you?
No one's done it much here as of late.
No.
Very impressive program they've put together here.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. They're pretty awesome. Plus, also in Class 1A, the Montana Wildcats get to have the regional on their home floor this year. Mm-hmm. So
good for them.
Yeah, the Cats will take on Brussels on a Tuesday night game. The topper, the top seed in that regional is West Central, Winchester, mm-hmm. and they'll get the winner of the Greenfield Bunker Hill game from Monday night, and that'll be a Tuesday night game for Winchester. Montana will play on Tuesday night against Brussels.
So. And think of Winchester. Always a tough-nosed, solid club. Yeah. I could think that period of time there, Terry, we were going to North Green like every single year for postseason. Yeah. West Central, they were always up there. Yeah. Always up there and always tough. The record's good this year, but there's been periods where the record's been closer to 500, but it's deceiving.
You notice that WIVC conference, and sometimes that conference kind of gets overlooked only because of the geography of the conference teams, but it's a good conference.
Oh, goodness.
I mean, you know, they put together some great teams over the years, and they usually do pretty well in postseason. So if you come across one, you got a game on your hands.
You think about the history of Carrollton.
Oh, yeah.
The history of Calhoun. West Central's got a solid history. Mm-hmm. I mean, there was a period where Greenfield was extremely tough.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and if you want to use similar opponents with West Central and Mount Olive, the Mount Olive girls lost to Litchfield earlier this season, and West Central beat Litchfield in the North Green tournament a couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
See, in the last couple years, to me, like, for Mount Olive, that's been their problem. They take care of the 1A schools that they're supposed to be, and they beat them handily. Yeah. Yeah. But when they get up against those 2A schools, that's where they've had their trouble.
Yeah, yeah. We're going to be hearing from Dave Kernich here in just a moment. So the regional start a week from Monday.
How about that? And they'll be over before we know it.
Oh,
always go so fast.
In the blink of an eye. And before we know it, the boys' regionals will start. And they'll be gone.
Of course, you mentioned, but unlike normal times, we'll have a 3A girls' regional dropped into the middle.
Yeah, in the middle of things. So with Litchfield, next Saturday we'll find out we'll announce where the Purple Panthers will be playing.
And you talk about a tough team to seed, being in a 3A regional, when they've basically
playing a strictly 2A schedule.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Litchfield's record, I'm not sure what it is off the top of my head right now, but it's good.
They're going to get 20 wins.
Yeah.
Because I think they're probably one or two away with four games left, I think.
So. I don't know.
You never know. That's right.
Tougher for the 3A coaches to seat him because it's like, okay, I don't know anything about him.
It is. And, you know, I consider them a 2A school even though they're going 3A. But the South Central Conference, especially this year, that'll have them ready.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this is a loaded up league.
Yeah. Yeah, they're not going to be afraid. That's for sure.
Well, you wonder if the 3A coaches will look at how they fared against Hillsborough and Southwestern and make those the toughest, the toughest tests right there.
And
aren't you glad you're not a coach and having to seed all these teams?
And 3A or not, Abby Brockmeyer will probably still be the best player on the floor. 3A, 4A, doesn't matter.
Pretty darn good. So,
we need to get to a break here on Sports Saturday. When we come back, we're going to talk with Mount Olive head coach Dave Kernich. The Wildcats have had a fantastic year, school record for wins. They played for their first county championship, and they will host a regional tournament beginning on the 8th of February. We will talk to Dave Kernich following these messages on Sports Saturday.
And we're joined on Sports Saturday by the head coach of the Mount Olive Wildcat girls basketball team, Dave Kernich. And Dave, another terrific season for the Wildcats this year. Give us a bit of an overview on how things have gone from the beginning of the year to now beyond the Macoupin County basketball tournament.
Well, I think the girls have developed, I think, pretty much the way I expected them to. We're really happy with where we're at, and they're, meeting my expectations in most respects. Sometimes they don't meet actually their own expectations, but they have very high standards for themselves. So the disappointments, the few disappointments we've had so far this season, kind of get magnified a little bit in their mind. But, anytime you lose a game, you can learn a lot from that and, actually much more than winning a game. And the loss to Piasau Southwestern Saturday really opened the girls' eyes to some little things. They're not major things, but it's these little things that do you in. And we've taken a look at that game really closely on tape and spent a considerable time analyzing it. And hopefully, we'll be able to address some of those issues there that that caused us to lose that game and move forward and be a better team because of it. I'm sure that we will, really. But the girls have, it's just, I really appreciate the recognition that they get on, WSMI through the newspapers, because it's so, as you can imagine, it's just so unusual here in Mount Holly for this to happen with regard to girls basketball, because we've struggled so much for so many years. They do a good job representing the school and their community, and, I'm very pleased with that.
Dave, let's talk a little bit about your players. And
sure.
The thing about the Wildcats is they're not a deep team. I mean, that's kind of been an ongoing story from the get-go.
Yeah.
But that gives you a chance to mention everybody on the team. Let's start with Jill Niehaus.
Well, I mean, Jill is, I think demonstrated her skills for, ever really since she was a freshman. She's a pretty advanced player, and she already was as a freshman. But she's gotten bigger and stronger, and she has her. Several of the girls have their workout routines that they do, in addition to working on their basketball skills, and it's pretty evident when you see them play. They're just, especially when it comes to the rebounding and the defense, they're strong kids, Jill does a great job, and we just I want her to compliment the team, though not be the focus of the team, and she does a good job of that. And the kids, I think everybody's pretty comfortable in their, in their role, because I've emphasized to them for a long time, you got to be an offensive threat when you go out there. It can't be just Jill, or it can't be just Brianna. It's got to be everybody. You've got to pose a threat to the opposition. If you don't do that, we're going to have a hard time. And I think they've, bought into that and done well with that. But Jill is Jill. I mean, she's going to give you 100% every night, and, she comes to play all the time.
How about the other members of the team? Let's go with Brianna here.
Well, Brianna just recently reached the 1,000-point level a couple of weeks ago, and Jill had done that a few weeks before her. So it's kind of like, it's kind of been a little bit unusual in that respect for Mount Holly, even that prior to these two girls, we had three girls that ever reached 1,000 points. So to have two within a month of each other in the same class was kind of interesting. But Brianna has really good hands. I mean, very good hands. And I think... If she comes to the understanding that, hey, I got to bring it every night, and I got to play hard all the time, both ends of the floor, I think Brianna could, get some help with her college education through basketball. She's got a reasonably decent size and just an excellent shooter. I think last year she was, in those stats that the State Journal publishes, I think she was finished second in the area in free throws. But she's got a great, really nice shot, and she's just a few points a game behind Jill, in the average. So she's also a nice complement to the team. Right behind her, in terms of, I'm just thinking of the scoring, is Zoe Murphy, who has really, really improved a great deal since she was a freshman. And she was, kind of a thinly little kid that wasn't just real sure of herself, and she's, of course, gotten bigger with the years, but she's the thing that she's grown with so much is in her confidence. And she's just a tremendous asset to the team in terms of, being willing to slash to the basket and, hitting the boards hard for the rebound, and plays good defense. And, at 5'9", and kind of long arms, she's, she can be a problem for, the person that she happens to be defending in a particular game. Next there you would have, no particular order, really. Caitlin Fields is usually our number two guard. Sometimes it's a kind of a toss-up as to whether I put her on the other team's point guard or I put Courtney Kernich on him. But Courtney's generally our one guard. But they're both excellent defenders. I mean, they're people that can just drive you nuts on the other team in terms of how effective they are on defense. So Caitlin gets that assignment a lot of the times, sometimes it's Courtney, but they're both, you know, they're both really good defenders, and I'm comfortable with them both up at the free throw line. As a team, we shoot reasonably well. I think our free throw percentage, I'm sure our free throw percentage is over 60% as a team. So, you know, I'm pretty comfortable with that. Courtney picks up a lot of steals. She's extremely quick. I haven't looked at it lately, but we turn our stats into the St. Louis Post also. And there they aggregate the stats for like 160 high schools in the St. Louis, basically in their circulation area. And I think last time I looked, Courtney was third out of 160 schools in terms of number of steals that she had accumulated this year so far. And then coming off the bench, we've got Madison Bowman is our first player off the bench if it's a post role that we have to fill. And Madison, that's actually the way she likes to play. She gets a little unnerved if she has to start the game, but if she can just come in and kind of get a few minutes to watch what's going on, she comes in and does a tremendous job. And she's going to the basket. There's no question, no two ways about that. She doesn't always have the finesse moves, but just going to that basket and taking it to the hoop, that's what she's going to do. Coming off the bench as a guard substitute, we have a freshman this year, Savannah Broome. And, every once in a while you get a few of these kids. Some kids you have to work a long time to get them over their fear of making mistakes, particularly when it comes to shooting the ball and, missing and being able to put that behind you and, take the next shot. Savannah Broome is not a problem. I mean, she is absolutely got a killer instinct and no memory whatsoever, no conscience. I mean, it doesn't make, if she missed five shots in a row, which would be unusual, if she missed five shots in a row, Terry, she's going to come right back and take the six shots as soon as you give her the opportunity.
But, David, how important is that on a team, though, when sometimes you got to have a basket?
Right. Oh, yeah. It's absolutely critical. It's absolutely critical that, you can put a kid in there, and this kid's going to, she's going to shoot, at the first opportunity. And she doesn't put up bad shots. Actually, none of them do. I mean, we have really, our shot selection, I think, is, very pleased with it. I couldn't even tell you the last time I told somebody that, don't take that shot, don't force up that shot. They just don't do that. And the last person off the bench would be for the post thing would be Amanda Naker, and Amanda's she never saw a 3-point shot she didn't like. I tell you what, and this is strange, and she doesn't get as much playing time as the other kids, but who our representative's been in that 3-point shooting competition for the last 2 years, Amanda Naker, and she she's won it when we have our little team competition. And last year she advanced to the next level at the sectional, and she's very comfortable shooting a three. She doesn't, she's not concerned the least about that. Well, but that's pretty much it. So we've got eight, and I know that's only eight, Terry, but it doesn't really concern me. It really doesn't, especially with the I got somebody coming off the bench who can sub for a guard. I got somebody that can come off the bench too that can sub for post. It has not. It certainly hasn't been a problem to this point, anyway.
And up to this point, I think you captured the Prairie State Conference title earlier.
Right.
You're
right
in line for the MSM title. So there are a couple of team goals right there that you certainly have been aiming for. But I know that the postseason is a big goal that you're shooting for.
Yeah, their main disappointment this year has been. We really thought we could win some tournaments. And, we've been in three of them, and that's where all of our losses are, in tournaments. But unfortunately, when we were really looking forward to playing Litchfield, and unfortunately, that was a game that Courtney Kernich had turned her ankle prior to that and was not able to play. And it was also before the freshman, Savannah Broome, had some health issues. And she didn't actually start till about the seventh or eighth game of the season playing. So we actually had no guard substitute. We played with basically one guard, and perimeter, post people happened to assume perimeter things in that game, so it was a tough loss for us at 5 points. Then we lost to Vandalia over there by two. Lost to Lebanon, which is an excellent, excellent team, in the Westland tournament. That was one of the greatest games, you know, that we've played, and I think that they've played in a long, long time. We each held the other team to their lowest point total of the season. We had 36 and they had 38. That really got, I mean, and you know, when you get into 1 or 2 point game, a lot of times that's usually the bounce of the ball at the end, and that's kind of how that worked out. And because we got stuck in the same pool, we ended up with third place in that, and, you know, they ended up winning the championship. But whoever got in that championship game was going to win it. That's just the way the caliber of the teams were. And, of course, you know, as you know, we were runner-up over there in Macoupin County. And I, you know, I mean, I know probably just casual fans are like, well, you know, that's pretty good for Mount Holly, runner-up. They've never finished that high before, which we haven't. But, you know, we didn't go over there to be the runner-up. We went over there with every intention of winning that tournament. And we played that. We had one bad quarter, the second quarter, against Southwestern, and you can't do that. And dug too much of a hole. I think we were down like 16 at the half, and actually outscored them the second half. Which my hat's off to our girls because they just never quit. You know, I mean, we just played them. You know, we played them hard and tight the whole second half, and you know, so it was. That game could, you know, minus the second quarter, that game could have gone, you know, either way. But Piesaw is a fine team, and you can't, you know, and Coach Willie is an excellent coach. And you can't dig yourself a hole against them and, you know, come back. But we tried.
We appreciate Coach Kernage taking some time out of his busy week to get with us. And you also wanted to mention that Matt Marietta does a great job of being an assistant coach and helping him out on the bench. By the way, there's some additional material, which was not part of this broadcast, but it is available on our website right now. If you go to WSMIRadio.com, you can hear the additional 6 or 7 minutes part of the broadcast with the interview with Dave Kernage. And we'll continue with Sports Saturday in just a moment. And we appreciate Coach Kernage taking time out of his busy week to get with us. He was not available to join us here this morning, and he made some special time for us. So thank you, David, and we appreciate that. And again, there's more to that interview, and it's available on our website right now at WSMIRadio.com. So
we will have Litchfield Hillsborough girls tonight live at 7:30 here on FM 106. We'll stream it at WSMIRadio.com. And then we'll have the Fighting Illini on the radio tomorrow. They will be hosting Wisconsin live at 5:30 tomorrow night here on FM 106.
I thought maybe they would pull one out the other night. They, you know, they were down. They battled back, and I'm going, gosh, this is, you know, kind of a run. Maybe this would be a momentum changer. Maybe something. Maybe the rest of the year will be better. And
how did they beat Purdue?
I don't know.
How did that happen?
It was Lou Hinson night.
Oh, well, there we go. Maybe every night should be Lou Hinson.
That's
night.
How they beat Purdue. It was Lou Hinson night. So.
Lou, where are you?
Oh, boy. Well, he's been to a lot of the games,
sitting
courtside.
Yeah.
Probably stopped going this year.
I doubt he loves the Illini.
That's true.
Must admit, I like the way the State Farm Center is set up with the Orange Crush. And yeah, I mean, everybody close to the floor. That's pretty cool.
Looks neat.
Yeah,
it looks
does. Nice. It looks really nice. Yeah, I like that. I like that atmosphere.
But, man, the actual basketball team, they don't make anything easy on themselves. It's always complicated. Always such an uphill battle.
They haven't for years.
Oh.
Since the team that made that run in 04, 05. Nothing's been easy.
That's a long time ago.
Yeah. 10 years.
Long time.
Nothing has been easy for them.
Mm. Especially in Big Ten play. I mean, even their home games against teams that they should be, you know, teams that are at the bottom of the league,
Nebraska.
Even those home games are a struggle for the Illini.
Teams that you play that would be a breather for other Big Ten conference teams at the top of the conference don't end up being a breather, you know, for the Illini.
And what's been disappointing to me is I've actually come to kind of expect the Illini to struggle with the Nebraskas of the world at home. But what they've been doing really, as long as I can remember, is competing on the road against the top teams in the league.
Except
I mean,
Indiana.
You can go back years, though. They played well at Michigan State. Mm-hmm. They've played well at Indiana. Maybe not won as many games.
I meant this past
game.
That was not good.
Yeah. That was not good. Yeah. But even now, all of a sudden, they laid an egg at Michigan State this year. The Indiana thing, ridiculous.
That was without Kendrick Nunn because he was waiting the birth of his son. The Michigan State one was.
Well, that's good.
Yeah, he wasn't there, which had a lot to do with it.
Couldn't bring the lady up to Michigan, have the kid there?
Have the kid there. Probably
got
not.
A ball game here.
I don't think you want to encourage the mother to be to travel.
You know, like I saw an interesting article today. It was about people who are born on airplanes and about, like, the weird, like, hurdles that they have in life. Their passport actually says this person was born on an aeroplane.
Really? Because
you don't really have a nationality. It depends where you're at in the in the airspace.
Airspace, huh?
Yeah, because, like, if you're born anywhere in America's waters or over land, you're an American citizen.
Right.
But not every country has the right of soil citizenship. But it was just interesting. Like, never thought about that. Like, if you're born on an airplane, what's your nationality?
I'm Boeing. Yes. Boeing. Yes, I'm Boeing.
I'm from planet Earth. That's my nationality.
Third rock from the sun.
That's right. Yeah. Exactly. I don't remember what we're talking about now. I got a side
track. The Illini.
Oh, the Illini. Yes.
The Illini in recent years have disappeared in the second half, though. At
big
times.
Time.
Yeah.
Big
they
time.
Just,
and, you know, this year basically is just a lost year because of the injuries. Mm-hmm. It's been from the day one with Tracy Abrams.
Just like last year.
Just like last year.
Yeah. Yeah. The injuries cost him last year.
I think it was a couple weeks ago I said they had a at least a shot to make the NCAA tournament if they would, you know, have a.
I think you said if they won out, David. I think that was the term you used.
Yes. I think.
Have they won since?
At that point, Dave,
they beat Purdue since, okay.
I gave a big guffaw.
They beat Purdue and Minnesota since then. So
okay. Well.
They have two wins since then. But yes,
but see, that's the good thing about playing in a power conference is if they got hot during the Big Ten tournament and somehow won that, boom, there you go. You're in. And it wouldn't matter. And we've seen that, you know, over the years with the Illini where they've made a run in that tournament when that was their only way to get into the dance. So that's kind of where they've put themselves now. They'll play Wisconsin Sunday. No Bo Ryan.
Or Frank Kaminsky.
That's hard to believe, no Bo Ryan.
I know. Too bad.
Remember Uncle Ralph used to say he was the perfect Badger
guy.
Look
just like the Badger. Oh, look just like the Badger. Especially when he was angry and agitated.
They just knocked off Michigan State not too long ago.
They did.
A couple weeks ago.
They did. In a crazy game.
Yeah.
They were on like 4 points with like 10 seconds to go and won.
Yeah. So they pulled a red.
That would have even made Bo Ryan smile.
Maybe.
Possibly. We need a break on Sports Saturday. We'll come back with more in a moment.
We are definitely entering one of the most fun times of the year for high school basketball, but we must also admit that it's a fun time of year because pitchers and catchers will be reporting.
Yeah. Oh, yes. Warms the heart.
And Yachty still might not be able to catch.
That doesn't warm the heart so much.
It's not. I think
guess they're looking for a veteran backup to the veteran backup.
Yeah.
I'm sure that'll go well. I'm sure that'll net a quality ball player.
I've heard Carson Kelly and Mike Ullman might get a shot at the backup job.
Those would not be veterans.
They would not be. And actually, Carson Kelly is one of the top prospects in the Cardinal system and supposedly the guy to take over for Yachty.
I mean, you would.
He's only, what, 21, 22?
You would think that would be the route they would go if they expect Yachty to be back. If they don't expect him to be back, they'll probably go out and really try to sign a veteran to Brian Tate.
If they don't expect Yachty to be back, they better make him a first baseman and find somebody other permanently.
Yeah, but, you know, I don't know if Yachty, if his bat plays at first base anymore.
I don't think it does.
You know, like, he had a couple of good offensive years there. And if you spell him at first base to get him a day break from catching, okay. But if he's just a primary first baseman, I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't think he's got the bat for that.
Yeah.
No. For the Cardinals, maybe he'd be just fine.
That's what are we comparing
to? For a normal Major League offense, probably not.
Yeah. It would be an upgrade in the Cardinals situation.
That's right. Well, it'll be interesting to see what happens with first base for the Cardinals this year. It sounds like Brandon Moss is going to get the first crack at it, and then Matt Adams will get his opportunities to see if he can do something.
Matt Adams could actually be very valuable if he's that guy that's going to be the guy coming off the bench, like he was a few years ago. So he was fantastic, hitting 17 home runs off the bench.
And I would
if he can be that guy, that's great.
But the book is out now.
Yeah, this is true.
I mean,
but he's also not getting.
And the book's in his head.
Well, a lot of times
with the shifts, you know. Like I think the Cardinals messed him up. A couple spring trainings ago, talking about go the other way, beat the shift. We want him to drop down some bunts. No.
Yeah.
Let's get him in the big poppy David Ortiz mindset. Oh. They've got six guys on the right side of the infield. Put it through them.
Yeah.
Hit it through them or hit it over them.
The little guys bunt. Okay.
Yes.
The big guys hit the ball hard.
Exactly.
That's a win for the defense who's imploring the shift. Yeah. If you've got a big lumbering guy like Matt Adams trying to hit singles the other way or drop down bunts.
And this from a team that goes station to station and doesn't go from first.
Yeah, they got plenty of guys who can hit singles. They've got that covered.
You remember the 2013 World Series when the Cardinals were shifting on Ortiz at Busch Stadium and he still hit yes. it where they weren't.
Exactly right. Exactly right. Power
still
it. Power
it into the gap right there where they weren't.
That's the thing. My biggest issue with Matt Adams is he just has too many ground balls.
Yeah.
You know, if he lifts the ball more, yeah. he's just fine. The ball will it'll fly out. He's got to get it in the air.
I think he stands too far away from the plate. He needs to take a page out of Rizzo's book and stand on the plate. Get on there.
Hey, there's something to be said for those power left-handed bats that stand right on top of the plate. You got nowhere to go.
I mean, that's why you're that's why you're getting beat because, you know, you're trying to pull the ball.
Didn't Barry Bonds stand right on top of the plate?
Yeah. You're trying to pull the ball that's on the outside corner, and you're grounding it to first every time. That's going to happen every time unless you scoot right onto the plate. You can actually get the barrel of the bat on it.
Look like Barry Bonds was holding looked like a twig. It was it really did, tiny in his hand.
You're waving it around with no problem.
Yeah, but then he always covered that outside corner, though.
He
it's
did.
Like, Barry, do you know how heavy those bats actually are?
No.
It's all about bat speed, boys.
Yes, it is.
It's about bat speed.
Yes, it is. And perhaps the other big issue for the Cardinals going into the year is the batting order, just in the terms of, is Matt Carpenter going to be the leadoff guy? Because you really need him in the middle of the order.
Mm-hmm.
But if he can't hit anywhere other than the leadoff spot, which he kind of said was the case last year, and the numbers bared it out, it's in his head.
Well, he pretty much just told Bernie this week that he wanted to be in the leadoff spot. He said he would hit anywhere Matheny put him, but he thinks for the kind of offense they have, he needs to be in the leadoff spot, which I don't necessarily disagree with, strictly because they don't have...
But the offense they have is terrible.
This is true. Somebody's got to get it started.
Fair point.
But to his defense, I love Colton Wong, but he's not consistent enough to be the leadoff hitter.
But when you're leading RBI guys in the leadoff
that's
spot,
problem.
That's a problem.
Yeah, it is.
That's a problem.
You know, and if Carpenter wants to bat leadoff, okay, maybe Wong should bat ninth.
I've said that they should bump the pitcher up eight.
You know, I mean, if you've got no pop in the middle of your order, if your best RBI guy is hitting first. More guys in front of him makes sense.
Personally, I thought they were really quick to take Wong out of the three hole last year because he did well when he hit third.
Let's be honest. They're really quick to take Wong out of every situation.
Yeah, they are.
If he has an 0 for 3, he's out.
Yeah.
0 for 6, you won't see him for a week and a half.
They've bumped him down to the eighth spot in the order, and he hit pretty well out of that. So.
I mean, if everything was equal, Colton Wong's your leadoff guy. He's, you know, on paper, he's got the makeup.
Right.
You know, he's got the speed.
He
can bunt.
You've brought him up to be that. That's all he's hit in the minor leagues.
Right. He doesn't get on base enough, though. Strikes out too much.
Yeah.
With that said, Carpenter struck out almost 200 times last year.
Cardinals struck out an awful lot.
They don't hit enough home runs to strike out as much as they do.
And they hit into a lot of double plays.
That's a bad combination. Singles, strikeouts, and double plays. How'd they win 100 games?
I don't know.
How'd they do that?
Pitching.
Amazing.
It was pitching.
Just amazing.
When you look back at it, and no wonder the pitching died out. It was gassed at the end of the year.
Carried them all year.
Oh,
it's going to be a really interesting year for Wainwright because I guess he went on a fantasy baseball radio program and defended why he shouldn't have been a seventh round pick because he was livid that he was going to be a seventh.
Oh, he didn't like it, huh?
No, he didn't like it. It's way too late. I'm going to prove to you guys this year that I'm not a seventh round pick.
Cardinals got a lot to prove to a lot of people this year. Got to be a heck of a baseball season. When's that first spring training broadcast coming up?
First weekend of March.
Oh, baby.
Yeah.
Excellent.
All right.